Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. Doug Gottlieb Show continues on. There was some epic foreshadowing by your boy. That's me. Epic foreshadowing brought to you by, right? There was some epic foreshadowing that I was able to come up with. And it was pretty simple in that when Simone Biles opted to not participate in most of the events at the Olympics, I wondered what would it look like if, and it's not a direct parallel. Like, I don't think that in men's sports you will ever see a star athlete, and she is a superstar athlete in any sports world, but she's a superstar, obviously, in gymnastics, say, I can't participate in our sport's biggest event because of a mental health issue. Now, the truth is she had what's known as the twisties, which we look at when you hear mental health, you get all the people who are like, you're just not sensitive enough. And like, look, there's all different levels of what a mental health issue is. And as I've told you before, generally, this is a generalization, but it's a true generalization. Generally, in sports, what allows athletes to be, well, better than the rest of us is that they can push through. Brett Favre, when his dad dies, can still perform. You know, how did that guy do it? How did he overcome? Who was the kicker for? He's a longtime kicker, and I think he was kicking for, I'm going to say, either the Falcons or the Buccaneers. Remember his son died?
Matt Bryant.
It was Matt Bryant, right? And Matt Bryant kicked that weekend after his son died. And I'm like, I'm crying watching. He's crying kicking extra points and field goals. And you're like, how does that guy do that? And the answer is, like, that's the spirit of athletics, is that these men and women are able to compartmentalize their fears, their anxiety, even off the field depression, any sort of issues, and then go out and perform way better than we're actually capable of. That's what makes them them. Right? So look, it's a different deal now. So Ben Simmons, this is not LeBron before the NBA Finals. Hey, and Ben Simmons obviously is a different dude and has a different background and wasn't subject to the crimes that happened to Simone Biles. But remember, if we're fair about Biles, that wasn't what she said it was about. It was never brought up. It was more the gymnastics things and having the twisties. He said he's not mentally able to perform with the Sixers. Not mentally able to perform with the Sixers. So what does that mean? Now, to most of us, I'm just going to assume here, right? To most of us, we read this and we see this and we're like, come on, dude. You just don't want to be there. And so you're going to use every possible excuse in the books to not play. But are we supposed to be sensitive to it? Right? You guys tell me, like, am I supposed to be sensitive to Ben Simmons, because Ben Simmons, well, he tried to no-show, then he showed up so he'd get paid. Then he seemingly purposely got kicked out of practice. Now they're going to return home, play in front of Philadelphia fans who are going to give him the business, and suddenly now he's got a mental health issue. Byer, you tell me, should I be sensitive to Ben Simmons?
No.
Why not?
I just don't think that there has from everything that is that we've heard over the last, what, 3 months since the Sixers, 4 months since the Sixers were eliminated from the playoffs, none of this has been brought up.
I agree. I agree. Now, it doesn't mean that, again, I agree with you, okay? Now, a psychologist or somebody else will say, well, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means he didn't share it at this time, yeah. Whatever, all the stuff he's going through. And I have no doubt that there's a mental health issue there. I've seen it myself where when you miss shots, you don't shoot, it builds up and it's like stage fright. You can't even get yourself to shoot a basketball. I have no doubt there, but is it so debilitating that through an entire offseason he can't work through it? I don't believe it. I think it's bull, but I'm not allowed to be sensitive at all to it. Right, which is kind of part of my, I understand the stories are far different, but again, that plays into, wait, we're picking and choosing based upon what we actually believe in terms of mental health.
Yeah, and the whole reason why I hesitated is exactly how I think you know, and because you don't want to just pass it off, because I believe it is a real thing, but I don't believe that that is what is the issue with Ben Simmons right now. Now, maybe this is developed because of how things have gone on with the 76ers. Maybe I should be more sensitive to that. But there just didn't seem to be, there just never seemed to be that narrative. Both sides were talking. Both sides were agreeing on getting out of Philly. Then he lost money. And so then he shows up at the team facility with people not even knowing that he's going to be there. And then we find out he can't recuperate the money. And he's just hanging. Like, there's, I don't know. It just seems like there were other issues than his mental well-being at the time.
You and I actually agree. It's just this interesting space in which we're in. Let me ask you, Jason Stewart, how do you, when you hear a guy go, hey, I got mental health issues, how does it land with you?
I mean, in a vacuum, I would take it at face value, but it's way too much water under the bridge here, right? Especially if you read these reports now that, like, the one caveat or the one loophole in the collective bargained contract here is that the team has to pay you if the reason why you can't play is for mental health issues. It's almost like his agent went down the contract and said, this is the one thing that we could use here and still get paid. I think there's a healthy skepticism from a lot of people here, and it doesn't look at insensitive. The Simone Biles thing, I think, is a completely different situation. That was just kind of out of nowhere and us reacting to a certain situation. To Dan's point, there's been so many building blocks here that it's like, okay, now you're going to go to this one? I mean, I think that skepticism is not insensitive here. That's my long answer to your question, Doug.
No, I love that answer because I actually agree with it in many different ways. I just think it's interesting. I mean, like, look, finding the loophole where you still get paid, I mean, it's kind of diabolical. And, you know, saying you have mental health issues generally is like saying, hey, my mom has cancer, and then you lay off the yo mama jokes, right? Like, everybody's like, whoa, stay away there. But he just doesn't have any equity. Doesn't have any equity. Yes.
Yeah, I think that the damage that it could do going further, if this isn't the case, to real mental health issues. Like, you know, you mentioned Simone Biles. Simone Biles was competing in the Olympics and then tried her, you know, vault, and it didn't work. Ben Simmons just didn't show up. I mean, like, there's something about going through and all of it. And so when she walked away, like, she gave an attempt. Ben was just staying away himself until he started losing money. So it's very difficult for me to compare the two. And then you throw in the U.S. gymnastics and the sexual abuse that went into that organization. And so to me, I can't even compare the two of being on the same page.
I agree, but I also think that, you know, again, it's one of those, like, all right, do we call a guy out for faking it?
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. Like, I mean, that's what I would be concerned about, because I think that there's been great strides in this. And So now, you know, we've had people who have questioned other athletes, and this is to me the most obvious that I have seen where I think it's different than Simone Biles. I think it's different than Naomi Osaka, and it just to me is just, you know, almost like a, you know, crying wolf. In essence.
Oh, no, I don't doubt it. I also think Naomi Osaka is completely different than Simone Biles, yeah. Is completely different than, like, yeah. You pick. Like, Naomi Osaka didn't love all the attention. The problem was, like, her career path was one that brought her more and more attention. Like, she wasn't comfortable being under whatever level of microscope she felt like she was under. And yet, you were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. You did light the torch. You did win the U.S. Open. Like, these are things, and you win the U.S. Open is in within your field, so that's an achievement. But the other stuff is stuff that you could have easily, like, hey, I'm not comfortable there. It's like, there's a bunch of different sides to it. And I felt the Osaka thing only bothered me in that I felt like she blamed the media for something that was going on with her personally, and I felt like that was unfair, calling out the media as being unfair, which I didn't think they were ever unfair to her.
Yeah, understood, yeah.
So, yeah, they all are different, but it is fascinating, and it does feel like Ben Simmons is one of these rare guys that with every next move that they figure out, he has less and less equity with the public. Right? Less and less equity with the public.
Yep.
You know, had he said, hey, look, man, I'm having some, and he said 3 months ago, I'm having some issues. You know, anybody who's ever dealt with mental health issues in sports, call it the yips. I can't get myself to shoot. I can't make it. I struggle in front of a crowd of people shooting the basketball. Like, he didn't even have to do that. If he said, like, all this stuff is related to mental health issues, people would have been like, hey, you're good. Take all the time. The problem was we didn't hear any of that. You know, all we heard was he's working out with his guy and they're posting these videos, you know, of him working out and making jump shots. And then I don't want to play for you anymore. I'm putting my houses on the market. I'm not showing up. I'm going to show up. Then I do show up. I got my cell phone in my pocket. Then I don't want to participate. And now you go mental health issue. Yeah, I mean, it does. It sounds exactly like Boy Who Cried Wolf. Exactly like it.
To your point, Doug, it's like, you know, obviously Twitter's a real bad barometer, but I don't know if you saw this, but the Sixers are kind of getting some blowback for calling for the psychiatric evaluation, right? And to me, that's like a business protecting their own. That's what they're supposed to do. It's like that story with Kobe Bryant's wife, Vanessa. It got leaked that the Orange County is asking for a psych eval of her, and they're getting a bunch of stuff. But these are people protecting their enterprises here. This is the way business is run. But it's gotten to that point in society where you can't even question anything that has to do with mental health.
Yeah, I mean, the I don't know enough about. I know what you're exactly what you're saying with the Vanessa Bryant thing, which I believe honestly is that's kind of par for the course, right? It's par for the course. She's saying her mental health is affected by the fact that these sheriff's deputies shared these photos, which is just awful, right? And she's suing them. She's suing them. So as part of defending yourself, there's, I'm sure a lawyer's like, okay, well, she's got to get a mental health eval, right? That's how we do it. And then I'm guessing her lawyer, somebody from her side, leaks that out. Are you kidding me? You want this woman whose husband and daughter died in a helicopter crash to get a mental health eval? And the answer is like, yeah, that's actually what we do. That's how the process actually works. So I'm with you. I don't think it's as sinister as it's being positioned to be.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live. Broadcasting live from the studios of Fox.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So there's a 75th anniversary list, okay? And we do this thing where like, oh, who's the biggest snubs? Okay, I'll give you some of the notable snubs that people are bringing up. Klay Thompson, Chris Bosh, Nikola Jokic, Lonzo Mourning, Dikembe, Adrian Dantley, Bob Lanier, Pau Gasol, Alex English, Bernard King, Vince Carter, Monta Ginobili, Tony Parker, Dwight Howard, Tracy McGrady. Okay, let me read to you that top 70. Should I read the top 75? Because I think it's super interesting. Okay, so here's what you got to do, though. This is the mistake that everybody makes is they're like, well, that guy got snubbed, and that guy got snubbed, and that guy got snubbed. You got to replace him. You got to replace somebody. That's what you have to do here. What I'm going to say is going to probably surprise you. Right? But when I tell you this, I mean it to be true. I don't think Carmelo Anthony belongs on that list. I think some of these additions of guys now are a joke. But look, some of the older guys are a bit of a joke too. Right? It's not just the new guys. Like Damian Lillard, like, come on, dude. In order to be one of the 75 greatest players in the history of the NBA, okay, you have to at some point in time be considered one of the five best players in the NBA. Right? Kareem is a six-time MVP. He's the all-time leading scorer in the history of the NBA. Are we okay with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar being on it? Yes. Ray Allen is not. He's a very good player. Very good player. But I don't believe there was ever a time when Ray Allen was one of the five best players in the NBA. Is there? Anyone?
I agree.
Okay. I mean, like, everybody loves Reggie Miller, and Reggie Miller had a great career, and he stayed with one team, but he was never one of the five best players. He was never even first. I don't think he was even second team All-NBA. I think the best he was third team All-NBA. And look, I understand Ray Allen was a 25-point-a-night guy. He was a much more well-rounded guy than the Ray Allen that played for Boston and won a championship in Miami and hit a big shot. He was a really, really, really good player. Really good player. Okay? But in 2007, when he averaged 27 a game, okay, they won 31 games. You know, in order for us to consider you one of the five best players, when you have your best year, your team should be at your best. His team's only won big. Now, he had that 1 year early in Milwaukee, I think it like his second year in Milwaukee, where they got maybe his third year in Milwaukee, where they made a run. I'm trying to think when it was. They made a run to like the Eastern Conference Finals.
2001. They lost to the 2001? Sixers in seven games.
Okay, yeah. So 2001. But in 2001... when he averaged 22 a game, right? Was he one of the five best players in the NBA? Buyer, do you believe he's one of the five best players in the NBA? Or 10 best players in the NBA?
At that time, no. And at no point did I put him in the top five.
Okay. Is that a fair litmus test for who should be? Remember, we're talking 75 years of basketball. Okay, 75 years of basketball. You have to either be something incredibly unique, and even that is really tough, or you got to be one of the five or ten most impactful players in the NBA. And if you're in that kind of fringe 10 to 15, you got, like, winning a championship helps. Go ahead.
Yeah, here would be my argument for Ray Allen, because it's kind of pre-Steph Curry, but when he was the best three-point shooter in NBA history,
he's what?
Before Steph Curry ended up doing, like, Ray Allen's number one. He had most three-pointers. Steph's going to fly past him. But in that NBA, he was the best three-point shooter in NBA history.
Okay. I don't believe Tracy McGrady belongs anywhere near that list. I thought Kyrie Irving, Kyrie is it's a hard one because he's been injured so often, but a dominant player at times in his career. I think Manu Ginobili belongs in there. Everybody knows I'm a big Manu guy in terms of affecting a game. But his stats won't stand up because he didn't play enough minutes. But he played on championship teams. His versatility, he brought so many different things to the NBA. And everywhere he went, they won. So that would be my guy. And then if I was going to take one out, I would probably take Damian Lillard out first. Carmelo was the best pure scorer in the league, and that is the one part where I would give some credit to Carmelo. The problem is that the flaws in his game, even more so than the flaws in his team, they always seem to, he played with good teams. They just never seem to win.
Did you see Klay Thompson?
Yes.
In his comments?
Yes.
Yeah.
I kind of agree with him. I don't know if he's... It's a hard one to find 75 guys, but I would rather have Klay Thompson on my team than Damian Lillard on my team because Klay Thompson plays both ends of the floor.
Klay said last night, maybe I'm just naive in my ability to play basketball, but in my head I'm top 75 all time. And then today tweeted or Instagram, woke up this morning still peed about this stupid list. You know, I can't wait to hoop again. Sick of the disrespect. Winning isn't everything to some people like it is to me, I guess.
Yeah, I think the winning part is big, but I also think we have to be fair, and some guys just haven't played on good enough teams. Like, it doesn't matter how good you are, you're not a good enough team. Like, that's also part of it. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Joel Klatt joins us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Joel, Ames this week?
No, I'm in Michigan for the Northwestern game.
Okay, let's get to Michigan. Let's start with Michigan. Look, they're winning these games. I like the defense. They can run the football. Can they throw it well enough to win the Big Ten?
Yeah, I think that's the question, and I think that's why we've seen them bring along their freshman quarterback J.J. McCarthy. He's gotten a lot of big snaps for them, and they've put him in the game. And they haven't been shy about it. And I think that the reason is they feel like if they need him to take their ceiling up a notch at some point in their season, then maybe that's a move that they'll have to make down the road. And remember, they lost their best wide receiver week one. Well, when they lost Ronnie Bell against Western Michigan, their passing game took a huge, huge step back. He's a really good player. And they've been having to find pieces on the outside. And I think that they've gotten to that point. They have a transfer. Dalen Baldwin, he's a guy who comes from Jackson State and I think gives them a little bit. But, you know, it remains to be seen if they're going to be able to throw the ball well enough to get through these last few games in a division that I think is the best in college football.
I want to circle back to the division being the best in college football. Let's go to the game that I wish you were calling, which was Oklahoma State taking on Iowa State. Gundy was on yesterday.
Me too, because, by the way, doing back-to-back with, like, the same team is so much better.
Oh, the best. I mean, the best, you know. Prep time. I just saw their last game, and to prep for that game, I watched the three previous games. Like, I don't need.
That's right.
You almost can travel with the team plane.
That's right.
But this is October, which is when Iowa State suddenly gets good. Oklahoma State has been good on defense. Offense coming along. Where are you on this game?
Well, I think it's going to be difficult for Oklahoma State. The environment. The fact that they, you know, offensively are very one-dimensional. They struggle throwing the ball. Jalen Warren has been terrific, and there's no. I was shocked at the defensive strategy Texas was using late in that game, not loading the box. You know they're going to run the ball. They had struggled throwing the ball, and Texas was allowing them to do so. The difficulty is that Iowa State is the best defense in the conference. They're good against the run. They're good against the pass. They're veteran. They're at home. I think if Oklahoma State is going to win this one, they're going to have to earn it. There's no doubt. And I think that this one might be their toughest test, save for a Bedlam matchup later in the season. But Iowa State is very good on the defensive side. Here's one thing that I do know about Oklahoma State. They are tough, man. Like, I was so impressed with their defense last week, Doug. I was so impressed with Jalen Warren. Their toughness, even Spencer Sanders didn't have a great game. He hung in there, and they just make enough plays and make it difficult on you because, as most people will tell you, and I'm certainly one of them, most games in our sport are lost and not won. And what Oklahoma State does pretty well is they don't lose games and in the sense of going out there and actively making mistakes that end up costing you the game. So from that standpoint, this one should be really good.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. You mentioned Oklahoma. Sam Darnold was a redshirt freshman. That's the last guy I can remember coming in three games in and completely changing the program's momentum. How sustainable is what Caleb Williams has been able to do?
I mean, it looks like the real deal. I don't want to jump overboard after one game, but it looks like they are the offense that we expected to see at the beginning of the season. It looks like they have found the ability to be explosive on that side of the ball. I don't want to get carried away and be like, oh, he's a Heisman Trophy, this or that. I mean, it's one game. So let's continue to see it. I think a lot of that hype has to do with what he did in the second half against Texas. But there's no doubt that he's special. I think about Trevor Lawrence as a true freshman. I mean, he took them to Clemson to a different level after Kelly Bryant was kind of the starter and had taken them to the playoffs. And there seemed to be a pretty clear ceiling with Kelly Bryant. And Dabo Swinney made the move early in that season. I think about the fourth game to Trevor Lawrence, and they obviously went on to win a national championship. That's the one that I would point to. But this one certainly is different in that you've got the incumbent front runner for a Heisman Trophy, maybe the number one overall pick, and he ends up getting beat out in the middle of a year in which you're taking the offense to a totally different level. So this one's fascinating for me. And that Oklahoma team, I put them at number two because the only thing missing for me was that offense. And now that they have it, it's going to be tough to beat them in that conference.
How did this happen to Clemson?
Oh, my gosh. I have no idea. And by the way, they've got a really tough game this week. They're at Pitt. Now, they're favored by 3, but I think that's a bit of a reputation thing. What they do have going for them is they've got the number 2 scoring defense in the country, giving up just about north of 12 points per game, but they're facing a quarterback. No one's talking about him, but maybe he should get more hype for the Heisman and potentially going to New York. Kenny Pickett, he's been terrific. That offense is the number 1 offense in the ACC, 5th in the country. He's thrown 21 touchdowns and only 1 interception. So there's a good chance Clemson loses this week. And then you're talking about, you know, not an all-time fall from grace, but boy, it going from a blue blood of blue bloods to out of the hemisphere in a matter of weeks.
Yeah, it's really crazy, crazy, crazy what's happened.
And Doug, I didn't answer your question, I don't think, because you said, what happened? Their offense is way too basic. Has been for a long time.
They've I totally
been
agree.
Out by great players.
Yes.
Great players. ETN, unbelievable player. Lawrence, unbelievable player. They've had terrific wide receivers. They had Deshaun Watson before that. They've got a little right now going on in their program. They've got a little of what Texas had in 2010, 11, and 12, in that they've got a coaching staff that has been there for a long time, won a ton of games, just shoo-ins for postseason, conference championships, so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden, you lose some of those guys. In Texas's case, they lose Vince Young. Then they lose Colt McCoy, who was there and played for like a million years. And then all of a sudden, you're left with all these guys, and you forgot how to develop people because you've been stagnant for the better part of 6 or 7 years through Deshaun Watson and then Trevor Lawrence. So Clemson right now reminds me a lot of Texas in 2010, 2011.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. LSU's open, USC's open. What's a better job?
I think USC is the better job. Any number of factors. I think both places you can win at the top level, and yet I don't think that the pressure nor the level of competition is as great at USC. You can sustain something, I think, better at USC than you can LSU. As good as the LSU job is, and it's great, I'm telling you, it is a top 3-4 job in all of college football, maybe top 5 job in all of college football. The last 3 coaches have won national championships. You have to at least look at the fact that 2 of them, they ran out of town. And if you don't win at that top level, you don't get much of a runway there at LSU. Whereas you do at USC, speaking to the expectations. And then from a recruiting standpoint, you don't have to recruit against, in your backyard, A&M, Texas, Oklahoma, Alabama, everybody out of the SEC, Georgia. That's really tough. Whereas USC, all they got to do, Doug, is find the right guy who knows how to put a fence around Southern California. They're going to get the top class in the country. They don't have virtually any competition in the Pac-12. That's the better job. People will argue with me until they're blue in the face, but I think that they're more SEC homers than they're looking at this objectively and saying, where can I sustain top-end success year over year if I'm a head coach? That place is USC.
You mentioned that you think the Big Ten East is the toughest division in college football, more so than the SEC West?
Well, this year it is. I think that they're better at the top. You've got, I think, legitimately 4 teams that are probably top 12 to 15 teams in the country, pretty legitimately. Tough, play good defense, well-rounded teams, excellent coaching staffs, have recruited very well, and then Michigan State's instance in the transfer portal recruited very well. So this year, they're the toughest at the top. Over any number of the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, then that's clearly the SEC West. But this year, the SEC West is not what it's been in the past. Even with A&M playing well against Alabama, this is not a division that's going to put that many teams in the top 15 in the country like the Big Ten East is this year.
Yeah, but I mean, again, I guess the problem with that is it, Penn State beat Auburn, right? But Auburn's not great. Ohio State lost to Oregon. I'm trying to think, Michigan, they haven't played anybody of substance out of conference. So it's like they're getting credit for not beating each other yet because they haven't played each other yet, and for beating inferior teams in the non-conference, where if you were going to defend the SEC this year, at least so far, they've played a tougher non-conference schedule.
They have, and that's generally not what we see, but you've seen Michigan State play the same Miami team that Alabama played and beat them pretty handily, and that one was down on Miami's home field. And I think that Oregon loss for Ohio State looks so much different right now for whatever reason. I think part of that is that they've changed defensively. Oregon's injuries have made us view that game a little bit differently. But, I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you, but for me, I think that the Big Ten East is the toughest division, and they're going to have to play all of those games in a tighter window. Remember, the SEC does a lot of favors for their schools, and one of those is spreading out their schedule. And you don't have that in the Big Ten. And these teams are going to all have to play each other all in the month of November. That's going to be incredibly tough. And in this case, I guess, October 30th and on. And I think that what you get from a scheduling perspective is that those tough games in the SEC West are going to be spread out. And you're going to have cupcakes before them, sometimes off weeks before them. The Big Ten schedule is not that way because in the SEC you played eight conference games, and the Big Ten you play 9 conference games. I know that we're splitting hairs here, but going through this back half of the season is going to be more difficult for the Big Ten East teams than for the SEC West teams.
Joel Klatt, check him out. Northwestern hosting Michigan on Big Fox this weekend. It should be awesome. He's always awesome. By the way, I love that you crushed the Dodger fans for leaving early, but some of that is also back when you were covering the Colorado Rockies, right? This group of Dodger fans, and the Dodgers do draw 3 million people every year, even when they were bad.
No doubt, and I think that speaks to the passion of the sports base in LA, which is very good. I am stodgy baseball guy evaluating, like, I don't want to see beach balls at Dodger Stadium. I don't want to see the wave. When you talk about knowledgeable baseball fans, I think it's one thing. The other thing that we were talking about, and Joy brought up, like, well, you can leave a movie whenever you want. It's so much different. See, when you're going to a movie, you're buying just for your entertainment, your entertainment. That's it. That's the only reason you're there. And people in L.A. have a little bit of that entertainment entitlement to them when they go to a sports environment.
Sure.
My contention would be, Doug, that when you're buying a ticket to go to a game, you are inserting yourself into the action. So you have no role in the movie when you sit in a movie theater whatsoever. But as a fan, you have a role in creating the home environment. So it matters when you show up and when you leave.
I agree with you in that context. I don't think there's beach balls at a playoff game. I could be wrong, but I also think that, like, it's like when the Miami Heat fans left during Game 6 of the finals where Ray Allen hit the three to save them,
right?
And yeah, dudes out. You had dudes out outside the arena giving like aftermath interviews as if they lost the game when it went to. When that wasn't the case, I went to overtime, right? So it was hysterical, but we do have a tendency to criticize the few for, But I don't understand what people are leaving for when there's traffic outside.
I think I'm probably falling into the cheap trap.
It's fun. It's fun to make fun.
My dad was a teacher and a football coach. So if we got the opportunity to go to a game, man, we were there half hour early, and we were waiting until they cleared the field. You know, because it was like that was once a year.
Yeah. No, I don't love leaving early either. Playoff game, World Series game, you never leave early. I think there does context matter. And I love you tweaking Dodger fans because it's fun. Have a safe trip. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, brother. Have a good one.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Every day at this time, we play for you a portion of a previous show on Fox Sports Radio, Fox Sports 1. We call it
Now.
This was what Skip Bayless said about Kyrie Irving not being on the NBA's 75th anniversary list.
The players are more in awe of Kyrie than a lot of us are in awe.
Right.
But I am.
Yes.
I'm more in line with the players because they have respect bordering on awe of what Kyrie can do. If you give him the ball down the stretch of games, he'll go crazy hot. To me, what offended me was Damian Lillard made this list. And I'm just not, I've told you 1,000 times on this show, I'm not sold on Dame. I know he's known for the walk-off over Paul George against Russ and OKC, and he's waving by and it's Dame time and all. But he got to one conference final. I've told you this 1,000 times. I'm going to say it one more time. Fourth quarter and overtime of 4 games in which they lost all four. Mm-hmm. He went 8 of 26 from the floor. That's 31%. He went 5 of 17 from three. That's 29%. And over that stretch of fourth quarter and overtime, he was a minus 30. We don't have enough show to go through all the shots in game 2, 3, and 4 that he missed late in those games. I was rooting for them because I wanted to see some fresh blood. You know, I wanted to see somebody new advance. And I thought it was his time and CJ's time. And so to me, If you gave me a choice right now between Kyrie Irving and Dame, I'm taking Kyrie any day or night.
I agree. I agree. Neither are great defenders. Kyrie's just more pain in the ass, whereas Damian Lillard is not viewed as such. But, I mean, you can't help but go like, I mean, we watched Damian Lillard this year with the Olympic team, and he's not at the level of the best players in the league. Like, we're just throwing guys in there that, like, no, that's not really how it works. 75th anniversary team, you got to be one of the four or five best players in the league. There's not a point in his career where he's been considered better than Steph Curry, right? There's just not. I mean, look, it's a little early on. I mean, Luka will be a guy above him on that list in terms of, I would guess, in terms of level of dominance. So I don't have any problem. I think Kyrie is a magnificent talent. Kyrie's issues are not just in personality, but he just hasn't been healthy. I mean, he's missed so many games, you know, first year, 51 games, second year, 59, most games he played was 75 games. That was, his fourth season in the NBA. He only played more than 73 times. So he's not really available. And what he is, he's a great scorer, not a good defender, and not seen as the world's greatest teammate. That works against him. But is he talented? And what Skip says in terms of the awe, people are in awe of the talent. That is absolutely true. And I would put him as a more impactful player than Damian Lillard. I don't think either, frankly, belong in the top 75 list. Here's Brady Quinn on the Baker Mayfield situation.
In all honesty, it's not to take a knock at Baker Mayfield, but you kind of take for granted how good this offensive line is, the play calling of Kevin Stefanski, the ground attack, and then obviously the talent of wide receiver.
Yeah, I'd say the problem with that is, like, we're doing one game, and it's against the Broncos, who aren't that good, who had no offense. I still think Baker's a really talented guy. He's just not an elite level talent, and he's going to follow in that how much do you pay him mode. All right, I'll give you my takeaway from the Browns game and get ready for this weekend next in the Doug Gottlieb Show.